The committee will come to order. We have a quorum. Representative Brown, would you like to move the minutes? I move the minutes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Pass. Representative Kunin, would you like to come down to the... Representative Faust, would you like to move the...
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 3584 to the General Register.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And there's, excuse me, there's also an A3 amendment that I would like to have amended to the bill to get it in the condition I would like the bill.
Representative Faust, would you like to move the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move amendment quoted H3584A3.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We need to put it in place, the amendment.
Madam Chair, I have a question regarding the A3 amendment before we vote on it, just to make sure I know. Representative Kunin, can you explain to me lines 1.6 and 1.7? Specifically, or a veterinarian who is familiar with the patient if the animal is not referred by a veterinarian. Explain to me where that came from.
Okay, Madam Chair and Representative Finn said, what this amendment is trying to do is bring in some of the concerns that the veterinarians had, and without going to direct referral, this would keep the veterinarians in the loop, and that's pretty much what we're trying to do. I have to admit to you, I've first seen this language about 2 minutes ago myself, but that's the general intent.
Representative Simpson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we vote on this, because this, I think, is an attempt by the author to try to get some peace on this issue, but before we vote on this, is there a chance we can just get someone from the Veterinarian Association to talk about this amendment, or specifically these two lines, just to make sure that this is language that's agreed upon and moves us in the right direction?
Thank you, Mr. Representative Finstead. If there's somebody in the audience that would like to
Madam Chair, my name is Tom Hagerty. I'm a veterinarian. I'm representing the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association. What the veterinarians have to have is the ability to make a diagnosis on an animal and then refer it to a chiropractor or to whomever, because there are so many diseases that mimic pain and are exacerbated by pain. So what this is saying, I think, is if a animal comes into a chiropractor who is licensed to work on animals, that chiropractor could look at it and then refer it or at least make contact with a veterinarian. We think that's just backwards. We think the veterinarian has to see the animal, make sure that it does not have some sort of infectious, contagious, or communicable disease, and then refer it to the chiropractor. So that's our problem with it.
Representative Ginsburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Hagerty, not to put you on the spot, but I guess my question would be in regards to the A3 amendment. if the A3 amendment goes on the bill still, from what I'm hearing from you, is not in a form that the Vet Med Association would support.
Mr. Chair, Chairman, or Representative Vincent, no, it is not.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I have Dr. Pierce Fleming with me, who is a licensed veterinarian animal chiropractor, and he could maybe speak a little more directly to that particular issue, if I may.
My name is Pierce Fleming. I'm a small animal veterinarian out in New Hope, and it was part of the animal husbandry working group that came up with these, and I believe this is kind of a direct result of the working group recommendations. And I did have a problem with this line, because what this says is that the chiropractor, this animal does not have to have an evaluation by a veterinarian. The only thing that the chiropractor has to do is to see the way this reads, or a veterinarian who is familiar with the patient was not, if the animal was not referred by a veterinarian. So what we're saying is, when an animal goes to a chiropractor, has the service, whatever medical service is done, then they have to send information to a veterinarian who is familiar with the animal. Not the case. We wouldn't necessarily, you'd be sending faxing over a report on this is what we found with this animal, but there's no patient doctor relationship established. The veterinarian would be looking at this and saying, I don't know what this problem is. That's the way this reads, is that the chiropractor has to send it to a veterinarian who's familiar with the patient, but not with what the problem is that they went to the chiropractor for, because they did not send the animal to the chiropractor. So our point of contention is that animals should be evaluated by a veterinarian before they go to a chiropractor. This leaves a back door open, so that doesn't have to happen.
Representative Coonan, do you have any discussion to the amendment?
Yes.
Or anybody else that you would like to have testify on it?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this language did come from the Animal Husbandry Working Group recommendation, just so that's clear. And we probably have at least a couple of testifiers who are willing to talk to this, but I think we'll start with the testifier at the table, and she'll give her name and who she represents for the record.
Very good. Thank you. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Yes, my name is Ann Cecil, and I believe I can speak regarding the amendment that is being discussed right now. I was present for all of the meetings of the Animal Husbandry Working Group, and the sentiments that Dr. Haggerty and Dr. Fleming just discussed were discussed at the Animal Husbandry Working Group, and the participants still found their final recommendation to be that either an animal should be referred by a veterinarian, or if that animal comes directly to the chiropractor should communicate back to a veterinarian that is familiar with that animal. I am the founder of Minnesota Animal Chiropractic Care. We're a group that's been trying to broaden access to animal chiropractic in the state, but only provided by specially trained chiropractors. This binder right here is 522 emails or letters that we've received from Minnesota citizens from almost every district in the state wanting to broaden access to animal chiropractic care. Chiropractors are trained to be members of healthcare teams. When we see human patients, they are able to come directly to us without a referral. We see men, women, children, pregnant women. All of these people are able to come to us without a referral, and the first thing we do is take a very thorough history and determine whether or not we're dealing with a chiropractic issue. If we are, we treat the patient. If we're not, we refer them to another practitioner that can help them in a way that we cannot. And one of the things that has been one of the most important points that citizens have made to me, I've talked with many of these 500 people over the last few years, and they want the right to choose. They want to be able to access a chiropractor directly for their animal. They're able to do this for their kids, and they'd like to be able to do it for their pets as well. Thank you very much.
Are there any other questions, comments, discussion? Do you have any other testifiers?
Yes, I believe you have at least one other testifier. Is it two? One or two? Two more. Okay.
Hi, my name is Charlie Westman. I'm a veterinarian. I was the first veterinarian to get certified in animal chiropractic in Minnesota 14 years ago. 10 years ago, I limited my practice to acupuncture and chiropractic on animals. And I'm in favor of the bill the way it's written in allowing chiropractors to work on animals. When I finished taking the chiropractic course for animals 14 years ago, I thought, wow, this stuff works. I don't care if they're veterinarians or chiropractors, as long as these animals get taken care of and get adjusted. And I still feel the same way. I feel it's best that we all work as a team and keep the communication open with the way it's proposed, I believe, with either a referral and then a return letter from the chiropractor what's going on. One thing I'd mention is that I do mostly horses, and they're almost all referred by other horse people. I do get referrals from veterinarians. About two out of three veterinarians, horse veterinarians now, endorse chiropractic, seem to be in favor of chiropractic now. And I don't even know if it's a chiropractic problem till I'm done examining the horse, and I've done 15,000 horses. So how's a vet going to know? And I'm a vet, you know, we're all here together. How's a vet going to know if it's a chiropractic issue? Because I don't even know until I'm done examining him with my chiropractic exam. So I think many of the patients wouldn't be allowed to see a chiropractor if they had to have a vet referral. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Jim Holbert, and I am a breeder of purebred Cairn Terriers, little Toto dogs, in St. Paul. And my veterinarian recommended for one of my dogs that I locate a chiropractor, get chiropractic care for one of my dogs. And she gave me a list of probably 10 veterinarians in the Twin Cities that I could call. This was about 2 years ago. And I started calling around and found that the earliest I could get the dog in, and the dog was in pain. You know how we have back pain? Well, that's what she had. The earliest I could get help for her was a month. And there would be evaluations and hundreds of dollars and really inappropriate inaccessibility. It virtually had no access for her for that care. And I started thinking that there was some restriction that need not be, and I've since found that it's true. So that's my background. The initial contact that I had with the animal chiropractors convinced me that this was a reasonable thing to do, to get chiropractors who have the license, the special 210 hours, and then move on to open access. And that's what I'm in favor of. I'm assuming Annie has given some of this evidence before, but the bill is modeled after the legislation that has been proven very successful in the state of Oklahoma. This bill also reflects the recommendations of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's Animal Husbandry Working Group, and that working group, including practicing veterinarians and professors of veterinary medicine, was the one that met for several months last year and forwarded its recommendations, including its support for open access to animal chiropractic, to the legislature this January. This bill only deals with chiropractors' legal ability to provide chiropractic services for animals. Currently, less than 2% of Minnesota's veterinarians, about 30 out of 2,200, are trained in animal chiropractic. The remaining 98% do not have the chiropractic training or specialized knowledge presented in the 210-hour course to provide chiropractic services to the animals. There's simply not enough chiropractic-trained veterinarians accessible under the current law to meet the existing demand. It is needlessly restrictive. Finally, I need to emphasize that this bill will add trained and skilled animal chiropractors to Minnesota's animal health care system, not weekend wonders. Licensed chiropractors who make the commitment to successfully complete the 210-hour program specified in the statute will provide state-of-the-art animal chiropractic care and will recognize conditions that require referral to veterinary care. I urge you to support HF 3584 as amended to allow registered chiropractors to provide owners open access to chiropractic care for their animals. Thank you.
Are there any discussions or questions? Any more? Amendments? Yes. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendments adopted.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there any testifiers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom Hagerty again. If I could have a page handout, a few handouts, and one of them is my testimony, which I'll be very brief, and then I have two folks with me that would like to testify, and I'll ask them to come down in just a minute. I've been a veterinarian a long time and been around practice a long time, and our concern is simply the fact that there are so many zoonotic diseases that affect animals and passed on to humans and exacerbate themselves in so many different ways that I just think it's very important that the veterinarian has the opportunity to look at that animal before it goes in to the chiropractor. We have no problem with the chiropractor working on the animal. As the previous testifier pointed out, there are a number of licensed veterinarians who have taken the training to be animal chiropractors. And they are available. Previous testifier said it took a long time to get in to see them. I don't know anything about that. But there are licensed veterinarians that are trained as chiropractors, but we have no problem with the chiropractors being trained as long as the veterinarian has the opportunity to examine the animal first, make sure there isn't another disease. If I could, Madam Chair, I've got, did you have more to say? I'd like to have Dr. Fleming just finish his testimony, and then I have two other folks that will introduce themselves if I could.
Thank you.
Pierce Fleming again. I was just before answering the question on that amendment. Because I'm a small animal veterinarian, I've been doing chiropractic for 7 years, been certified in that. And so I've been through the program. I know how the training goes. And one of the things, so through that course, our primary point of contention here, is as far as the states go in the union, half the states do not allow chiropractors to do any work on animals. Another quarter of them will allow it with direct supervision, meaning the veterinarian has to be right there. We're not asking for any of that. All we're saying is that the veterinarian should be part of the evaluation process for what for looking at these animals, because there's many diseases and different things that can mimic pain in animals, and the education of veterinarians being 4 years, and what education the doctors of chiropractic receive at this course of certification, most of that time is spent on learning animal chiropractic. They have, there is some, a lot of time set aside for anatomy for animals, which our chiropractors have not had as far as animal anatomy. And we're talking about multiple species. We're talking about horses, dogs. That's what we're trained in, but chiropractic, if allowing for any animals, I do it in cats as well. So there's different anatomies to learn. There's different diseases within each of those species. And my contention would be that the chiropractors do not get that in-depth a look to know all the different rule-outs that can be happening in an individual case. So that is, I feel that there's been a compromise here for allowing, we want veterinarians, or we want chiropractors to be able to, qualified chiropractors to be able to work on animals. I'm not sure, and I do know that there is a need. I do know that there's a waiting list. I do know that we have never had anyone have to wait a month at our clinic to see a chiropractor. But, let's see. I was on the animal husbandry group, and there is an official note in this recommendation about the dissension of the veterinarians disagreeing with that point. So, this is not, the approval was under dissension as far as the recommendations that came from him. So, we're just always going to do, I'm going to do what is best for the animal. And the best thing the animal, I welcome the chiropractors being involved in animal chiropractic. It's just the two of us should do that hand in hand, and that's how the animals are going to have the best kind of care, is to have veterinarians involved in the process. So,
any questions, comments?
Hi, my name is Kate Ann Hunter. I'm a small animal practitioner. And my practice is fairly traditional in terms of Western medicine, but my clients ask for more and more alternatives, chiropractic, herbal massage, different things that I'm not qualified to do. However, in referring them to practitioners who can provide those services, I feel it's extremely important that with my 4 years of veterinary school, learning the very basic, you know, down to the anatomy and physiology level, that I can make a diagnosis and make sure that they're referred to the appropriate part. One of the great things about practicing any kind of medicine in Minnesota is we really do ask for a very high quality, very high standard of practice. We ask that our animals be cared for to the very highest degree that is provided both technologically and financially. And I think it's clear that we wouldn't ask anyone to make any sort of a medical diagnosis to a human without having gone to medical school and having a very extensive education. And we ask the same for our animals. Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a general question. And I guess this is what I struggle with mostly with this bill, is what you just brought up. Both groups, chiropractors and veterinarians, go to an extensive training. And in the human field, I can go to a chiropractor without going to the doctor. Yet you want me to send my animal to the doctor before I go to the chiropractor. And I'm struggling with that because I really don't understand that concept, why there should be a gatekeeper in animal chiropractic practice, and they go through 210 hours of training specifically to animals in that, as opposed to the other. I mean, you just mentioned that humans are much more complex. You're right, yet we don't require me to go to my doctor every time I see the chiropractor. And the chiropractor is trained to recognize non-skeletal situations where they may send you to a doctor or refer somewhere else. They're trained, they're professionals. So I guess that's the biggest problem I have, is it just doesn't seem consistent with the way chiropractors work at this point in time.
I think the difference in my mind is that the chiropractors have taken more than 210 hours of study in their human study of chiropractic. So to me, that's a very different amount of time that's being spent on that education. And we're only asking that we work together. And the other part that's a little bit different and why these animal welfare issues come up in different areas is that the animal doesn't have a voice. And so it's incumbent upon animal owners, veterinarians, people who do this to be able to work together.
And Madam Chair, just to follow up, and just for my clarification, because I really don't know, and I didn't go to those meetings this summer. I went to the first meeting, and I was glad to not ever go again. So, how many hours of chiropractic training does the veterinarian get when he's training?
In the general practice, none. Like the MDs, it's more of a general practice.
Thank you.
I have a question. Where do they get their training, and how far away, and what?
That's a good question. We'd have to ask Dr. Fleming that. Can I speak to that, too?
There's now a few different...
You need to put it on the mic. Thank you.
I believe there are 4 different schools that you can fulfill the requirements now, and that's a week a month for 5 months, so it's over 250 to 300 hours involved. And so that we have, as far as the MDMA, we have not argued as far as that. That's, I think we both sides have agreed that that's what the qualification should be, which is certification by the American Veterinary Chiropractic Association, AVCA certification, is that to pass those standards and to maintain continuing education there. We don't, the two groups are completely together on that should be the qualification for who can do it.
And my question is, where do you get that training?
There is a school in Madison, or I'm sorry, it's not Madison, in Wisconsin. There's Colorado, University of Colorado. There's one in Oklahoma, and I believe there is a 4th one available now.
That's another point, is what, how are they going to get certified? You can't go to Madison for, you still have your other practice, and is it really feasible to get training when you have to go that far?
Well, that's what we had to do. When I got my training, when I was approved in 2001, there was only one school, and it was down in Illinois, on the Illinois-Iowa border. That was the only place, but now 4 have sprung up. People will travel to get certified. We all have. Those of us that are certified, I mean, this isn't going to be all over.
Well, but you know that there's a reason there's a shortage. It's because it's so far to get training, quite frankly. So that's my point.
What's the thing with, and it's the thing with acupuncture as well. I mean, those certifications are the same. You have to go to Florida, have to go to Canada, have to go to, but people do it and get themselves certified. So.
So is the U ever going to do something like that in Minnesota?
I'm not a university person. I mean, but what I would say is I think that people are becoming more open to these things, but this isn't something that can be done in a short period of time either. It's a time-consuming kind of thing. So I would hope that universities would be open to this kind of training because it has made me a better veterinarian and a better diagnostician, the training.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just curious, I guess I haven't heard yet a compelling reason we need to regulate this industry to begin with. If Representative Finstead wants to become trained in doing animal chiropractic and wants to have and takes 25 hours of training, he would have substantially less training than the 210 hours you're looking at here. If Representative Morrow wants to go and have 500 hours of training, he would have substantially more, and it would seem to me in the marketplace he would be worth more than Representative Finstead. They wanted me to switch that around, by the way. But I struggle with, you know, and obviously what we've got going on here is we've got two groups who are kind of putting their elbows out saying, you know, I want to get in on this. If I'm reading it correctly, but from a consumer standpoint and from What are the downsides to not even entertaining this bill?
Well, right now, we are one of the states that do not allow that no one other than veterinarians can practice medicine on animals. So that's why the chiropractors have brought the bill.
Oh, this loosens the restrictions. Okay. I apologize. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just real quick comment to Representative Drozdowski. Representative Drozdowski, are you familiar with the great teeth-floating debate?
No, Representative Erdahl, but I think I'm going to quickly become familiar with it.
Well, Madam Chair, we won't belabor it right now, but I'll fill you in later.
Any other questions? I think we have one more testifier.
My name is Stan Hill. I'm a veterinarian from Buffalo, Minnesota. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for letting me come and speak to this issue. My background goes back into education, where I have had students in veterinary medicine. I've also mentored several students to put in 40 years of practice in mixed animal practice, which includes small animals, large animals, horses, you name it. Also along the way, I served on the AVMA executive board for 6 years, representing Iowa and Minnesota, and several committees of the American Veterinary Medical Association. I currently serve on the Council on Veterinary Services, which reviews the positions of AVMA routinely. I would like to, Representative Morrow mentioned that, or Representative Drozdowski mentioned that there's no compelling reason for even discussing this. But I think the compelling reason comes from the two-page guidelines of complementary and alternative veterinary medicine that is published by the American Veterinary Medical Association. And I'd like to just read a couple lines from that. The foremost objective in veterinary medicine is patient welfare. Ideally, sound veterinary medicine is effective, safe, is proven, and holistic in that it considers all aspects of the animal patient in the context of its environment. Diagnosis should be based on sound accepted principles of veterinary medicine. Proven treatment methods should be discussed with the owner or authorized agent when presenting the treatment, and the options available and owner consent should be obtained prior to initiating any treatment, including the alternative medicine. I think the biggest difference between whether you decide if you go to the chiropractor without any evaluation or whether you take your child to the chiropractor without an evaluation is that you and the child can speak for yourselves, or the child can speak through you. However, with animals, they have no person that can speak for them, and the veterinarian is the person who can speak for that animal. Animal welfare has become a big issue with the American Veterinary Medical Association, and it's one of the main forces in our actions in every meeting that we have in Schaumburg. So I think the compelling reason is that, as Dr. Haggerty said, animals are good foolers. They can give you a list of symptoms that may not necessarily direct you to what is actually bothering that animal. And I think the veterinarian, who has had that experience on a daily basis for many years, is better at analyzing what that animal's problems may be directed to And if he feels that it is important to have a chiropractor take care of that animal, whether that chiropractor be a human chiropractor or a veterinary chiropractor, or a human chiropractor who's had training in veterinary chiropractic, I think it only means that that veterinarian has evaluated that patient and is able to direct that defenseless animal to the right place. One of the responsibilities that we have is state statutes define and regulate the practice of veterinary medicine, including many aspects of alternative veterinary medicine. And these guidelines support the requisite interaction described in the definition of the veterinarian-client-patient relationship. Accordingly, a veterinarian should examine an animal and establish a preliminary diagnosis before any treatment is initiated. The VCPR, or the veterinary-client-patient relationship, took many hours of my time and many hours of all of the managing people with the American Veterinary Medical Association to put responsibility on the veterinary profession that in order for them to provide services for that animal, they must have an active veterinary client-patient relationship, the VCPR. And I think it's that simple that if you hand off the decision-making to someone else, you've handed off the decision of the VCPR as well. And as Tom Haggerty and my good friend said, I think it's backwards. We have no objection to veterinary chiropractors serving these patients. We have no objection to human chiropractors serving these patients. But we do have to have someone that has the responsibility and the liability for making those decisions, which can be very serious. They can be life-threatening, or they can be life-saving either way. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
Are there any questions? Discussion? Representative Fowles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I have to agree very strongly with Representative Junkie. I understand your point about the animals can't talk to the doctor, but I don't think they can talk to the veterinarian either. And so I just don't buy that. I have a real hard time having a higher standard for animals than I do humans. And humans can go to a chiropractor whenever they feel like it, whenever they want to. And I have a hard time putting more restrictions on animals' ability to go to chiropractor than I do humans. So I guess I support this bill.
Could I speak to that? Just because Kate and Dr. Hunter touched on that, and I think the difference here is the amount of education that human chiropractors have with human anatomy and human disease. They spend a lot of time learning about those things. In the short period of time, this 5 weeks that we're training for animal chiropractic, which is spent most time on that, there isn't that much time that is spent on what is animals' anatomy, what is what are diseases that can, what are viruses that can show themselves as medicine. To become a doctor of chiropractic, they're going to spend lots of time learning about the humans. But as far as multiple species goes, to learn that in less than 50 hours and say you've got that all matched, you're going to know the rule out to every kind of problem that comes in, I think is not accurate. So,
Representative Fowles, do you have?
Well, if that's the case, then I think the solution is instead of 210 hours that we increase that number rather than just say thou shalt not do it. And so, if that's the solution, then let's look at that instead. But I don't think that to say you can't do it because 210 hours isn't enough is the right solution. Rather, we should come up, you know, work with Representative Kuhn to come up with the right number. If 500 is the right number or whatever it is, let's fix it that way rather than say you just can't do it.
I don't disagree, but now you have to go to the AVCA, who's established what those guidelines are and how much education that they need in each individual field. And you're talking about going to Oklahoma, and so, okay, now we're going to go 4 more weeks to learn anatomy or wherever you're going to have to do it. It's you know, it's not without problems.
If I could just add one thing to that, and that is that my comment about the animals being perfect foolers, in 40 years I've learned what they can tell you and throw you off base. But I think I've learned some of the ways that they can do that, and I've been able to follow that and to come up with a better decision of what is actually going on, whether it be in their care, whether it be in their nutrition, whether it be in the oversight that those animals have. I think the veterinarian has a leg up in that particular area.
It's kind of interesting because I sit on the health committee for 10 years, and it's kind of, we kind of went back and forth just like this, so. Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I usually don't advocate for sending these things to Health Committee, but this is definitely one where it should be heard in the licensing subcommittee, because we are directly, members, we're directly affecting the scope of practice with chiropractors in the state of Minnesota. This bill changes the statute that defines what a chiropractor is in this state. We have a committee in this legislature that is set up for these exact bills, so maybe your CA or you, Madam Chair, remember to call on me before we move this out, because I'd like to make a motion that deals with that. I also represent False Bluff now, but I had a series of questions, and I didn't expect them to answer them, but I wanted to point out some of the complexities with this piece of legislation. 210 hours, I guess, from the overall topical view seems like, oh, that's a nice share of time. We would probably be able to learn a lot about animals. But my questions would come down along the lines that in 210 hours, are you going to tell me how many bones are in a chicken? How many bones are in a horse? How many bones in a dog? How many bones in the foot of a horse? A horse that is aging and becoming arthritic, what are some common ways a horse presents those symptoms? What's the thigh bone on a horse called? We have tons of questions that in 210 hours you're not going to be able to understand to the point where you're going to go out and start to manipulate the, I can go through the lines, the resolving the vertebral subluxation complexes, the spinal manipulation of extremity articulations of non-human vertebrates. And we're not talking about going and giving a deep tissue massage to a horse. We're talking about doing some major things. And not to take away from anything that chiropractors do, because they're very well trained, and they're very well trained in the art of the human anatomy and physiology. But we're talking about a whole new ball of wax, and This is a typical, and Madam Chair, you alluded to this, a typical turf battle that we deal with all the time in the Health and Human Service Licensing Subcommittee, because it's definitely talking about changing the scope of practice, changing the way chiropractors can do business in this state, and I think as consumers, it's not ready for prime time. So with that, Madam Chair, I have the A2 amendment I'd like to offer. Now, granted, I offer this tongue-in-cheek, because I still don't think I'm going to vote for this bill if this goes on. But this at least will put a little bit more teeth into the bill to say that we're not changing the scope of practice with animal chiropractic to the point where they're going to be diagnosing disease. And it also will then make sure that on the back page, line 4, that we're doing everything we can to make sure that the veterinarian of that animal or of that farmer is in the loop of how the care will be approached with the animal. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A2 amendment.
Madam Chair.
Representative Duncan.
Representative Finstead, we did the A3 amendment, it went on, and what you're doing is exactly the same, except it's less a couple of things. So your language is already in the bill, from what I can tell here. We did the A3, and your two lines were included in the A3 that Representative Conan put on to begin with. So I think yours is moot right now, you're doing the same thing over.
Madam Chair, I don't think from the outside, I think it appears to be that way, Representative Duncan, but the language has changed a little bit in the A3.
Not on the lines you're doing, Representative Finstead.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Finstead, if you wanted to, if you're adding, but to delete the new language that Representative Conan added beyond your two lines, that's different. Your amendment simply adds the two lines that Conan did on his amendment in 1.2 and 1.6.
Madam Chair, Representative Duncan, I appreciate what you're pointing out here. There is, the bottom line is I think the A3 amendment went too far. They added more words than I would have liked to see after page 4, line 2. So I guess, folks, the bottom line is this, that the A2 amendment, to me, is more simple and it's more clearly defined. It doesn't add the extra words of the A3 amendment. So procedurally, however I have to do it, that's fine. If I have to, you know, move to replace my language with the A3 language, whatever it may be, I'm looking for direction.
Well, again, Madam Chair, and I understand what you're doing, but your amendment as a standalone is already done. It's in there. So, I mean, council can help us out, but it's a redundant amendment at this point. Madam Chair?
Let's have council give us this.
Madam Chair and members, I think, the biggest change between the two amendments, I believe, is the line that if the animal was referred, I believe Representative Finstad's intention at this point then would be to get on the A3 that was adopted, the or a veterinarian who is familiar with the patient, the animal was not referred by a veterinarian. That's now incorporated in the bill. What we'd have to do is take that back out. I'm not exactly sure how to word that. We amend that amendment, the procedure. I'm not exactly positive, but I think that would be the effect. So in the end, let's see, on the bill, what we'd end up with on line 4.1 or 4.2 would just end with veterinarian. So then, again, it would be implied that a referral is required. As far as the other lines previous to that in the A3, I don't know. I think we have to go through those maybe one at a time and see what should be in or out because all of those are adopted at this point. But I think the main point of contention is that last piece, and I could draft an amendment to do it if that's what the committee decides to do.
Madam Chair, I think he was right on. Now I know how to count votes. And I know it went on in the first place, so I'm probably not going to have the votes to take it off. I understand that. But I would say and I would beg the author to, at least if this bill is going to be moving, if you would give us the signal or give us the indication and possibly even take some friendly advice on getting that piece out for right now until we can get our arms around how the veterinarian will be involved in this process going forward. I mean, that is a major concern right now, is that at what point in the relationship with the farmer, the animal owner, the veterinarian, and the animal, where the veterinarian plays a part. And I just want to make sure that we're not pushing the veterinarian to the side and we're keeping them involved. So, Representative Kuhn, if you'd have any comments to help me out on this, I'd appreciate it.
Madam Chair,
Representative Conan,
and Representative Finstead, this bill, is when it leaves here, I understand it's going to the General Register, and so what happens here will stand at least until it would get to a conference committee. To your point of the Health and Human Services Licensing Subcommittee, this bill was referred to the Health Committee, and they didn't want to see it. So on the floor, I had it re-referred to this committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think, Representative Finstead, if you look at the amendment A3, you would see that a veterinarian is still involved with this, but it's after the fact rather than before the fact. They're saying that that the chiropractor has to report back to the veterinarian who is familiar with the patient if the animal was not referred by a veterinarian. So there is contact with the veterinarian, and it just requires it afterwards if it wasn't before.
Madam Chair, Representative Faust, then you may be smarter than I am. Could you explain to me what a veterinarian who is familiar with the patient if the animal was not referred by a veterinarian? Could you explain to me what that means? I saw the horse in the pasture as I drove by. I'm familiar with that thing.
I guess my opinion is all I can give you. My opinion of it is that it's a veterinarian that has seen the animal before. When we've had animals in our house, we've had, you know, many dogs, and there's always a veterinarian that's familiar with that we've taken it to get shots that knows the animal, that's been there, you know, once every year or two at the most. And so that would, to me, would qualify as somebody that's familiar with it. Somebody driving by, they saw the horse, and they go, yeah, that's a horse, that wouldn't qualify. But I'll give you, it doesn't say what that is in this bill, but I think common sense would give us a pretty good idea what that means.
Madam Chair?
Ms. Seafeld could address that, too.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I was present at all the meetings of the Animal Husbandry Working Group, and what you just described was exactly their intent. They wanted to make sure that there was a veterinarian involved in that animal's care somehow. And it is a veterinarian who has seen the animal before, not necessarily being referred for this particular case, but a veterinarian that's familiar with the animal in the sense that they have seen them before. So I just wanted to verify that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I'll withdraw my motion for the A2 amendment. So if that is the intent, well then, and if I'm being told it's sent to the General Register and we're not going to have a say that it should go elsewhere, could I get the author then to clean that language up? Because what you're saying is more specific than familiar with. You're saying actually has seen the animal as a patient. That's different to me than familiar with. And Representative Faust, I agree with you. I would love to see us pass common sense stuff, but you know as well as I do that's happening little to none. So, I respect your opinion. I probably agree with your opinion when it comes to this, but I know in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years that what we say or what we just will do here is not going to matter. It's going to become some lawyer's definition, no offense, Representative Morrow, some lawyer's definition of what familiar is.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Jones. And for what it's worth, I agree with Representative Finch that they can clean up that language, because I think, again, that was one of the reasons, and I think that came out of the group's recommendation too, that it should be the veterinarian will know them that the animal is at the chiropractor, but doesn't have to go pay for the office visit at the veterinarian before going there. And that's really all that they're doing. So there will be notification back and forth, and I guess that's why I've always trying to understand. You know, that's even beyond what we do with humans. So, I mean, my chiropractor doesn't call my doctor every time I go there, but they will have to with the animal. Are you got language to clean that up, Representative Conan? Or counsel?
Madam Chair and members, I think the language would be Kuna moves to amend House File 3584 as amended by the H3584A3 amendment And I don't have a page line, but if we go back to the A3 amendment, basically page 4, line 2, starting on line 1.6, it would still read page 4, line 2, delete. Wait a second, that's all incorporated. On line 1.7, basically, strike is familiar with the patient and put has previously seen the animal.
And I would move that, Madam Chair, since he's not on the committee.
Any discussion to that amendment?
I think that that's a good way. I think, I don't know if Representative Finstead thinks that's good enough or not, but I think that that's a good compromise, and I think that makes sure that somebody that has seen the animal is familiar with what's going on. I think that's the important point that we're trying to make.
Representative
Finstead? Madam Chair, it's hard to not support Chairman Junkie's great amendment. Can I just get a head shake yes from the veterinarians if that's commonly his word?
Yes, no.
Counsel, you want
to? I was going to offer, in place of previously seeing the animal, but the patient's veterinarian. Does that establish the relationship more clearly?
Madam Chair.
Representative Morrow.
Like I said, Council, can you read the entire amendment now as you're proposing it?
Yeah.
Madam Chair and members, I'm going to kind of incorporate the amendment, the A3 as adopted on the fly, and then modify it. I think it's... Okay. Just to save confusion, I think it's easiest if we just go back to the bill and we'll look at how it will read when we're all done here. So, starting on line 4.1, I would say, upon request, they must communicate their findings and treatment plan with the referring veterinarian or the animal's veterinarian if the animal was not referred by a veterinarian. We say animal and veterinarian several times in there, but I think that maybe makes it the most clear who the actors are here.
Mm-hmm. I'd incorporate that language into my amendment.
Further discussion to the amendment?
You got someone at the table. Do you want to talk on the amendment?
Madam Chairman, Representative Duncan, no, I think we're getting there. I think this is getting toward it. We're trying to keep this veterinary client-patient relationship in place. I think this is getting there.
And Madam Chair, so basically, just to explain again, there is a relationship between if you have you just picked up a mutt on the street and you haven't had him into the veterinarian, you cannot bring him to a chiropractor unless you first go to a veterinarian. Now they've treated them. Now you go to the chiropractor anytime you want, because the chiropractor will inform the vet there. So, I mean, again, I agree with Dr. Hagerty. I think we're as back and forth as we can go on this without, you know, simply eliminating chiropractic as a viable field at all. So I would hope that people are finding this is kind of middle ground, and maybe we can move ahead with less controversy than we've seen in some of these bills.
Discussion to the oral amendment. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Bill passes.
Oh, no. Amendment. Adopted. Representative Erdahl.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A major concern that I still have is the lack of institutions that train in this field. Does anyone know, are there any plans for having training in Minnesota, or did I miss it? Is there anything in Minnesota?
No.
Thank you. There isn't any training available in Minnesota currently. There's a large interest sitting in the gallery over there is the president of the Animal Chiropractic Club from Northwestern Health Sciences University, and she's informed me that there's an enormous interest among the students there. There's nothing available in Minnesota now, but there are two chiropractors or chiropractic students in the room that are currently traveling to Wisconsin to get this training because it's worth that to us to do. And there are also two members or two people in the room that are planning to do that in the fall.
Madam Chair.
Representative Rudolph.
Thank you. Just a couple brief comments first. You know, I would hope that we could have something in Minnesota to make it easier for people to get this training so they could perform this service. And also, just a comment for Representative Coonan. I referenced Peace Floating before, and it was one of your great bills of last year, which took up more time than I think we've had in a committee meeting, and now this one. I was wondering if you had any other plans. I see a former Commissioner Goodnow here. I'm wondering, are we going to have nursing homes for animals? Is there any chance of barbers entering into this in your legislation next year?
You know, Madam Chairman and Representative Hurdle, you know, if you'd asked me a few years ago if we'd been talking about this stuff, I would have said probably not. So who knows what the future holds.
Oh, good. Maybe.
Representative Faust, do you remove most
of the...
Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good try. I just want to close, just to repeat some of my comments. No one has disputed this. This clearly changes the scope of practice for a chiropractic license in the state of Minnesota. There seems to be no dispute or no testimony towards that. Representative Coonan said that Chairman Tao of the Licensing Subcommittee on Health and Human Services said that he did not want to see this. I would say he's wrong. And I can't wait to have that conversation with him. But this is a bill that needs to go in front of that licensing subcommittee because we've dealt with all of these issues. Now, I sit on that subcommittee, so it's very dumb for me to make this motion because I'll have to live through this again if it passes. But the bottom line is it needs to go through this committee. So I would ask for this bill as amended to be referred to the licensing subcommittee of the Health and Human Service Committee, and I'd ask for a roll call, Madam Chair.
Well, we'll have to re...
He's just amending the motion.
Yeah.
False motion.
False motion is to amend.
To amend
the... Moving to amend the false motion to re-refer to the...
Okay.
To Health and Human Services.
So we'll re... Finstead moves the motion to amend false... motion.
Madam Chair.
And Representative Finster is asking for a roll call.
Fowler.
No.
Hamilton. Brown.
Pass.
No.
Rakowski.
Yes.
Beacon.
No.
Finstead.
Yes.
Haas.
No.
Jelke.
No.
Morrow.
No.
Manske.
Yes.
Erdahl.
Yes.
Osterbach.
No. No. The motion has been defeated. Representative Fowler,
yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I renew my motion to pass House Bill 3584 to the General Register.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
the bill passed and will go to the general register.
Representative Trimble, would you like to move your bill, please? So I think it needs to go to local government.
Okay. I will move House File 3507, and it's about food and food handlers. And I have Heidi Kastenberg to from the department to go through that bill.
I missed the last part. Okay. I'll just state Representative Otremba moves House File 3507, and then it goes to local government committee. So, okay.
Thank you.
We'll go ahead and give us your testimony on House File 3507.
My name is Dr. Heidi Kassenburn. I'm the Dairy and Food Inspection Division Director, and I'm here to talk about this particular bill. On Subdivision 10, where it's a vending machine, this language is to update the language to include credit cards that are used in vending machines. When this was written, this was not something that was commonly used. We're clarifying vending machine description.
Okay.
Then on 2.1, talking about if a firm is found to be operating in multiple years without paying license fees, the state may collect the appropriate fees and penalties for each year of operation. This clarifies language that we believe we already have, but it's much more efficient to have it spelled out rather than spending time explaining to the facility owners that haven't paid. So this is really a cleanup of language. Then there are several spots within the next grouping where it was an oversight to not include or sales. A lot of these subparagraphs have sales or service on them, but some do not. We want to include or service on those as well. Moving several pages to Subdivision 3, Disaster Areas. We want to allow our commissioner to waive fees for businesses involved in disasters so that they can get back up into business more quickly and also not burden them with fees. Normally, like for instance in southeastern Minnesota this year, there were businesses that were food facilities that needed to make repairs in order to have them processed food safely. They need to be approved by our department, and they collect fees for that. We would like the ability to waive those. The next part has to do with the definition of vending machines. specifically in a grocery store, you have a water vending. We do not want those to be considered vending machines because then they would be subject to a licensing fee. What we want to do is include those in our regular inspection of those generally at the grocery store. So we want to specify that we do not consider those to be vending machines. Moving into grading, the language did not state for the USDA grading of eggs. What we want to do is, both for interstate, between states, and also within the state, so they're all subject to USDA egg grading standards. Moving on to subdivision two, as far as equipment. In the old language, certain equipment was grandfathered in back in 1991, and so this equipment is practically no longer in existence, but if it is, it needs to be retired because it's no longer it's more of an antique type of equipment rather than good, safe, quality equipment. So they should have had plenty of time to upgrade that equipment, at least a decade and a half to do that. Then we also want to change the temperature for keeping eggs to be the same as in other food codes, so dropping it from 45 to 41 degrees Celsius, or 41, I'm sorry, Fahrenheit. And then also to include that shell eggs that have been frozen shouldn't be offered for sale, so the eggs you could get in the carton, if they've been frozen, they're potentially hazardous because they can have microscopic cracks that can allow bacteria in. So that bacteria can get sucked in and cause spoilage of that egg and also some unsafe food conditions. Our next change will be under the definitions of embargoes and condemnations. What we seek to do here is there's a gap in statutes as far as our ability to keep an animal that has been contaminated with a chemical or toxin from entering the food supply. Currently, Board of Animal Health regulations only deal with animals that are affected by a disease. Our regulations have to do with food, and it's a question of when does an animal become food. This seeks to give the Commissioner of Agriculture authority to restrict animals that have been contaminated by things such as lead, or going back to early this spring, we would have had difficulty should we have had any livestock that were contaminated with melamine, restricting those from entering the food supply because of this gap. So that's what we wish to do on that particular change. Then in 31.175, the water, plumbing, and sewage, the plumbing program was moved from the Department of Health to Labor and Industry, and so we want to make that language reflect that change. And then also, so that it conforms to that program. Are there any questions?
I do have a question. You skipped over on page 10, the bottom part, employment of diseased person. Can you explain that, please?
Oh, yes. This is no longer an issue. This is old language. This is not a venereal disease does not constitute a public health hazard with food handlers.
Okay. All right, thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions for Dr. Fossenmore? Morris?
I believe
anyone?
There's amendment.
Sorry?
Amendment.
Representative Szymanski.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Boterm, I'd like to offer an amendment to the bill. The amendment is H3507A1.
All right, thank you. Any discussion to the amendment?
What amendment is it? Let them explain it.
Let them explain it, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Could you explain your amendment a little bit?
Okay. This deals with the somatic cell count in goat's milk. And basically what it says, under current Minnesota law, goat's milk, raw goat's milk with a somatic cell count exceeding 1 million cells per milliliter cannot be processed in the state. So what we have is our producers of goat's milk are having to ship their product out of state to have it processed into cheese and other products. Currently, we have several producers who are sending milk either to Canada or to Wisconsin to have it processed. And Wisconsin does allow, as well as Canada, 1.5 million cells per milliliter in the somatic cell count. So we're just trying to coordinate our regulations with our neighbors so that we can keep our product here in state and do the value-added processing here in Minnesota.
Okay, thank you, Representative Chomsky. Do I understand you're saying that it's currently at 1 million cells?
Yes, that's correct.
And this will raise it to 1.5. Is there a difference between goat milk and cow's milk as to why we need the higher number?
Yes, there is. And that is in the processing. It's the physiology of the goats, right? but they generally do run a higher somatic cell count because of their structure and nutrition and so forth.
Okay. To the author of the bill, do you have a problem with this amendment? What's your opinion of the amendment?
Actually, I support the amendment. I have a lot of Amish in my area, and they have the same kind of problems with getting their milk to the processor.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any more discussion on the amendment? Sorry, Representative Doty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this same issue has been brought to me recently by several goat milk producers in my district, and they would like an even playing field with Wisconsin.
All right. Any other discussion on the amendment? If not, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Say no. Motion carries. Amendment carries. Back to the amended bill. Is there any more discussion on the amended bill? If not, Representative Otremba, would you please renew your motion to pass House File 3507, please?
I renew my motion that House File 3507, as amended, will pass with recommendation, and we're referring it to the Committee on Local Government.
Thank you very much. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Say no. The motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you, committee.
Representative Junkie, we'll do your bill next, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 3552 be recommended pass and refer to Committee on Finance.
Thank you very much. Go ahead with your...
Members, there was a Next Gen Energy Board that met monthly. You all got a report electronically last week, I believe. In that report, there's a number of recommendations. Three of them, I believe, are contained in this bill. One of them adds another member to the board. The board thought there should be someone from the forestry industry in the state, since they are going to be intimately involved in the future with biofuels. And so this adds someone from the forest products industry in that first section. When we go to page 2, there's also it takes out a sunset that was put in. Again, the board, now that it has formed, we're finding out that it works well, and we want to continue that board into the near future, and so we ask that the sunset be removed. That comes again from the board recommendation. The last thing is on page 4. Just basically a drafting mistake last year. We met for the monies that are involved with this board to be available for both years of the biennium, and basically the language that was put in only made it available for the first year. So we just want that anything that has been used to carry over into the second year. And that's the bill, Madam Chair and members. Nothing spectacular, but just three technical changes from the Next Gen Energy Board. Do you need any?
No.
Oh, thank you.
You were no, it, I guess.
This is it. And again, members, just remind you that Next Gen Energy Board not only met monthly, but it's also comprised of, I believe, four or five different commissioners, governors, appointees, as well as legislators. So it's a broad, and these recommendations are all unanimously approved by those folks.
Anybody have representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Junkie, have you considered maybe rather than just striking the expiration date, extending it, say 5 years or something? There's these boards and commissions; they exist into perpetuity and sometimes outlive their useful life. And would that be something you'd entertain,
Madam Chair? The commission, the board did discuss that, but we can't see any future date at this point where we wouldn't need a Next Gen Energy Board. I think we all know over the next, till 2025 is when our 25 and 25 mandate comes out. We think at least till then and well beyond we'll be talking about energy issues. So this board worked extremely well as a clearinghouse, if you will, for folks to come in with their next generation energy ideas. Again, it was a governor's initiative, and on behalf of four commissioners that are representing him, they all thought we should take this away. So we did have that discussion in the board and decided against putting another date in because no one knew what that date might be.
Madam Chair? Thank you. And Representative Junkie, how about 2025? That's at least in. It would be nice, it would be responsible, I think, for us as a legislature to at least have a day for this to be reviewed.
Madam Chair, we can talk about it. It's going down to finance, and I'll have the governor's office check in with you on it.
We don't all agree with the governor anyway.
Any other discussions? Questions? If not, I'm going to renew your motion.
Madam Chair, I remove my motion. House File 3550 to be recommended to pass and re-refer to Committee on Finance.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Pass. There was another bill on the agenda, and they're not here, so we'll move it to Wednesday, and make sure that you're here at 8 o'clock if you have a lot of bills to get done. Meeting's adjourned.